This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle analyzes and explains the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many more. We broadcast live every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which means you can call us during the show and ask Dr. Lyle a question. The U.S. number is 657-383-0751. Or send in your question through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org.
Today, we are discussing a very interesting subject that comes about when people go on dates, when people, members of the opposite sex, and they get into a relationship, and they're starting to figure out how things are. And this is a pretty common scenario where we have one partner says one thing, but they mean another. So Dr. Lyle, we're going to list a couple clips, and then we're going to get your comment from them. And we're going to, the first part of this pod is going to be what she says versus what she actually means. And then after that, we're going to talk about what he says versus what he actually means. Ready?
All right. This sounds great.
All right. So let's take a look at the first one. It's a few seconds. We're going to get a girl who's talking about what she actually says. And then a few seconds later, she goes. So we're going to get a reaction from you to tell, let us know if this is correct scientifically.
All right.
Babe, what are you thinking? I'm just bored. Analyzing you is fun.
Dr. Lyle?
Yes. Yeah, I don't think, are those two women talking?
It's the same girl. And the first girl says what she tells her mate. And what she actually means is she's analyzing him.
Oh, that she's analyzing him?
Yeah, let me play it again.
Go ahead, try it again.
I'm just bored. Analyzing you is fun.
Oh, I don't think so. That's actually not what's happening. So what's happening in that situation is that remember, she's all activity of all creatures on Earth is being filtered through a cost-benefit analysis. And so any twitch of any whisker of any animal that ever lived, there was a reason for it. Okay, so if she asks the guy, what are you thinking, it's because she wants to know. She's not just bored and wanting to analyze him. That's not the point. Point is that she's got an agenda. She wants to actually be tracking what's going on inside of his head. And actually, if she's asking him that question, there's a high likelihood that she's got some anxiety about the relationship, for example, and she wants to find out what's going on. Now that may not be true, but it could easily be the case. It also might be that she's actually just wanting to get in sync with where he's at because she's wanting to be a good partner. So, she cannot read him and can't figure out what his mind is doing at that point, what he's working on, and so she's just trying to join in. So, but at any rate, let me tell you what she's not doing. Quote, she's not analyzing him because she's bored and analyzing him is fun. That is not what's taking place. So that's a bankrupt theory by somebody that doesn't know anything.
All right. Well, I love this. Let's go to the second one here because this is an entire clip of what we just heard, which is the girl says, and then she's in her voice, she's saying what she actually means. Here's our second clip.
No, I really like your friend Chris.
Oh, yeah, isn't he great?
Mm-hmm. Chris is compatible with my friend Stephanie.
Are you there?
Yep.
Yeah, I could not understand what the second sentence was, like what her true interpretation was.
her true interpretation is that Chris is compatible with her friend Stephanie.
Oh. Maybe. Who knows? So she says she likes his friend Chris. But the truth of the matter is that there's any number of motivations for this. So that's sort of all that the person's doing that's saying this is saying, gee, isn't this clever that women sometimes have a subterranean motive that is romantic and matchmaking inside their heads when they ask what looks like an innocent question. Yeah, maybe, but there's also a whole bunch of other motives that they could have. So, for example, she could be seeing whether or not actually the way she said that remarkably, the tone of her voice was slightly seductive and sexual. Quite frankly, so whoever taped this thing, the bottom line is that sounded like a woman who is attracted to this guy, Chris, quite frankly. And so now I don't, obviously that's not what they were going for here, but what they were going for is, ooh, she's thinking Chris is kind of cool because she's got some friend she's going to hook up with her. She wouldn't be that excited about that process in all probability. So of course women have matchmaking agendas inside their heads. Women are actually designed by nature to try to get everybody paired up so that the village is more stable. And particularly, they want to get highly attractive people paired up. And so that agenda can be sitting inside. It could be sitting inside males' heads as well. But males don't have that agenda nearly to the extent that females do because they don't really value in-village stability that much. They're perfectly fine to duke it out with each other and have competitive processes between them around potential mates. Women, if they are mated, as this woman is, would just as soon like to have all of all the people in the village sort of all matched up. So she might be interested in getting her friend Stephanie matched up with this guy, friends Chris, because Stephanie might be more sexually attractive than she is, and she might be worried about Stephanie pulling her boyfriend away from her. So these would, you know, obviously we could speculate with 50 permutations of this, but the notion that this is a high probability that this is what this woman is thinking is ludicrous. She might have any number of agendas, including she could be a little too forceful in her positive paralinguistic cues. As she, in order to incite a little jealousy mechanism out of her mate, that's a possibility. And also to test whether or not how much he really likes his friend Chris for a variety of social reasons. So the social politics of the human being can get very quickly, very fast. And to assume that you know the person's motivation, their political motivation for anything like this, would be ridiculous. There could easily be 25 to 50 motivations, and your odds of picking out what it is are about even odds across the board. It's 2-3% likelihood of being right.
Fantastic. We've got six then, now that we've figured out that they're ridiculous.
Good. All right. What's up next?
All right. Here's third one.
This guy won't stop messaging me. I want you to know other boys still find me desirable.
Yeah. Are we there? Are you back?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually very likely to be true. Okay, so that would be a very smart tactic for a woman to use, and that is a tactic that they will often use. However, and also just to show you how likely this one is to be true, that whoever is messaging her, if they're messaging her repeatedly, then it's likely that she's giving them some feedback or they wouldn't continue to message her. So So there could be a variety of motivations. Number one, that she's actually doing some encouraging of this person. It's also possible that she's actually quite interested and is looking to step out on her relationship potentially. And what she's doing is she's doing a whole bunch of, she's foreshadowing the fact that she could be caught in a socially awkward position that her mate might make the inference that she's having an affair. So she essentially wants to blame it on this quasi-stalker so that the real social dynamics of the situation are obscured. So this gets to be, as you can see, once again, very clever things happening here. It could be that she's trying to incite jealousy. It could be that she's actually covering for a potential affair. Or it's a third legitimate possibility would be that she's actually complaining and looking to signal to her mate that she has a quasi-stalking situation that's problematic and that she may need his muscle and intimidation to get rid of a problem. So that is what she's in fact signaling, but that is probably the least likely possibility out of the three.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Okay, let's play number four.
I was just like, look, what do I do all this work for? Kristen, can you put your phone away? This is the moment I'm testing how much you love me. Oh, thank God.
All right, Kyle.
Let me see. To explain this one to me, because I'm not sure I get it.
So she says, can you put your phone away? And what she actually means is, this is the time where I get to test to see if you actually value me.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to keep asking you details here, so that I make sure that I understand the situation. So is she talking to someone or is she texting a friend?
She's hanging out with a friend in the same proximity, so they're at the table together.
So, and this is a boyfriend or a friend?
It's a female friend, and they're hanging out together. And the female friend is on her phone. It's on the phone, like texting or playing with the phone.
Right. Got it.
And she's telling the friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's telling the friend, can you please put your phone away?
Okay.
And what she actually means is, this is the moment where we test to see if you actually care about me.
Well, if you tell somebody to put the phone away, that's a pretty damn direct message that's saying, this is effectively my time that I've gone to trouble to be here in front of you. And so I take priority, okay? And if that you could call it a test, but I actually look at it as a little different than a test. I mean, this is looking like a reasonably assertive demand. And so that she's, again, cost-benefit analysis. We are not only running a cost-benefit analysis on our options for behavior, but we are observing the cost-benefit analysis that the people on the other side of the table are running on us. So in this case, our girl that is not on the phone, talking to the friend that is on the phone, has run a cost-benefit analysis to be in this girl's company and not be on the phone and actually planning to engage with a friend. Her friend is then running a cost-benefit analysis and saying, yeah, I've made some trouble to be here, but I'd actually prefer to be communicating with somebody else on the other end of the phone right now than communicating with you. Okay? So this is a very reasonable to feel insulted. And so this is obviously, I mean, we've got a simplistic thing about this is my test as to whether or not you value me. Well, I wouldn't quite look at it that way. That theme is certainly in this picture, but really it's a matter of displaying some anger, and anger is a mechanism by which human beings signal to each other that they believe that they've been treated unfairly. And the notion there is to activate guilt, which would then result in concessions. So this is a warning that she is sending, and so that message, it isn't a message to see whether or not I'm valued. It's a message to say, listen, I value you. You need to be valuing me on an par basis. And if you're not, you can feel the underlying anger that I'm signaling you. And what anger is a threat of consequences for behavior that is not fair. Okay. So the most obvious reaction of anger in the animal kingdom and in human nature is violence. Okay. So this is not a situation that could possibly result in violence. But violence is just a number in the most one of a number in the most dramatic of sanctions that one individual can direct towards another individual. There are any number of sanctions, and it's all about threatening something that the other person finds valuable. So, for example, if you're late one more time, you're going to lose your job. Okay? If you look at another woman, I'm leaving you. Okay? So these are threats. If you move one over inch over this line, we're going to bomb your country. Okay? So that's what anger is. It's a mechanism to signal that there will be sanctions unless the behavior becomes fair from the other side. In this case, the woman is signaling to her friend that her friend had better pay attention to this anger, or else she is potentially facing the withdrawal of the relationship. Okay? That is exactly what is being signaled here. So it's not, oh, I'm trying to find out if you value me. It is, you had better value me, because if you don't make the choice very clearly right now that I, in person, who have gone to the trouble to being with you, is not more valuable than somebody else that all they did was fiddle on their phone, if you cannot make that distinction, and if I don't rate high enough, then basically you can pound sand down a rat hole and go to hell, and I'm done. Okay? That is actually the threat that is being leveled. And those are the reasons, mm-hmm. and those are the parameters involved.
Now, a couple of years ago, you wrote a book called The Pleasure Trap, and you have a TED Talk by the same name. And that hypernormal stimuli that's present in our environment today that was not present in the Stone Age environment. In your estimation, are the smartphones and mobile apps and all these hypernormal visual stimuli a good analogy for what's going on in the social situations with people?
Keep talking. You're thinking about something. Get a little more clear what you're thinking.
What I'm thinking of is with social media and with the invention of apps and the iPhones and the smartphones, people have access to info like never before. And they have access to other people like never before. Mm-hmm. And I have friends on both sides. I have a group of friends that they recognize that they're so addicted to their phones that they just constantly have to check their phones left and right. And every interaction socially, they have to be checking their phones. So we got to the point where whenever we go out to dinner, we put our phones in the middle, mm-hmm. and we say that the first person who reaches for their phone unconsciously has to pay for everybody's meal. And this is a good little social.
It's beautiful.
Whereas with some friends, it's kind of that everyone's just going to be basically half in the situation and they're on their phone right and left, and really a lot of focus with what people are doing. Now, I'm not sure if it's just because of the type of relationship or with the type of friends that it is, or if this is just a larger phenomenon.
Let's think about that for just a minute. Certainly I understand exactly what you're talking about, and I have the same quasi-addiction. And what it is, what's driving it, is that they're because our lives have our social interactions have potentially expanded considerably. In other words, we are now in contact with a wider net of people more often than you would have been 15 years ago. And as a result of that, there's potentially interesting possible value propositions that are being sent to you, okay? And so, hey, do you want to go have lunch? Hey, would you want to go do something next week, et cetera? It's a wider net of people that is more socially interconnected. And as a result, there are potential rewards for you're essentially, as the little emails and texts and so forth come in, there might be interesting things coming your way, okay? And also, there's a lot of potentially humorous things and interesting things that people are sending to each other within their networks because there's such an ability to transmit information worldwide now that people can be very quickly informed of something interesting that happened. So some whale lands on the beach in San Diego, and the whole country is going to know about it within an hour. And so in this way, it makes some sense why people feel a compulsion to be checking in with their electronic media. So our little interaction here with the two friends, it makes sense that, and this is sort of obvious protocol, that with two people, they're either both going to be on their phone or neither should be on the phone. Okay, so if they're sitting down together, they can be basically thinking to each other and signaling to each other, hey, we're just sort of hanging out, but we still got some things going because we're managing three or four conversations or potential situations that are bubbling. So we're sort of checking. Okay, there are more people. They aren't really alone. They're each living inside a cyberspace of which the other one is also there. Okay, so. So in that way, we can acknowledge that, no, we're actually both sitting within our own, an intersecting cyberspace where I'm actually sort of interacting with three or four people, including you, and you're sort of acting with three or four other people, but including me, okay? So you'll see people do that. But when one person is essentially drawing the line and saying they're not doing that, they're focused on the one individual, then for the individual to remain cycling through a four or five or even an additional conversation is fundamentally rude, and that's why we had the situation that we had. But in response to your general question and comment, in essence, these are not supernormal stimuli in the true sense of supernormal stimuli, because the social relationships and communications that are going on with electronic media are not supernormal. But they have certainly changed the normal dynamics of two people sitting in the same proximity with each other, because now it is not just two people; it's 10 people, and also we have a mechanism for getting updates and important, potentially useful value propositions from 30 more people within your social network while you sit there. And so that's why it is a new set of effectively what would you call these manners? A new set of rules for social interrelations, I think, is spontaneously evolving.
And speaking of, so it was an evolutionary psychologist. I forgot who predicted the rise of memes, which is, you were talking about, Bale on the Beach and all these other things.
Yes, meme was actually a word that was invented by Richard Dawkins.
Yes, and, that was who I was thinking of.
Yes, and so Dawkins was essentially believing that there would be characteristics of information that would have similar properties to DNA in terms of their reproduction, not like DNA physically, but essentially that DNA. Is effective to the extent that it is high fidelity and that it has high ability to reproduce, and that in that way, that if you could, certain kinds of DNA are very, very successful in ecological niches, and in the same way, certain kinds of information would be very, very effective at essentially getting themselves reproduced inside of human brains. And that is true. And so now the world understands the importance of memes. And Dawkins was the first person to recognize that concept.
All right. So let's move along and go to our next audio clip.
You're so much better at this than I am. You should.
Don't worry, honey. I'll do it. That means fuck you. You're a grown man. How do you not know how to fold laundry?
All right. So let's see. So he basically is playing a child because he doesn't want to do it. And she is assuming the essentially a parental role, and she's irritated about it. Okay, so this is going to be, it's useful to know. So something that this brings up is that there are two primary manipulative tactics in human nature in order to get what you want. And I mean, there are more than this, but these are two particularly the edgy manipulative tactics. Obviously, one basic manipulative tactic is to simply educate the other person about a cost-benefit value proposition that's better than the one that they've got staring them in the face. So if you're buying Bic pens for $1 a piece and I can sell them to you for 90 cents, then I'm simply going to educate you that I can get you the same thing for 10% less. A great deal of the world's communications and, quote, manipulation is all about that just straight value proposition permutations. Now, however, within more intimate human relationships, there are two primary manipulative tactics. Those primary manipulative tactics are going to be anger and they're going to be tears. Okay, so these two tactics essentially represent opposite ends of a continuum of where the two people stand with respect to a dominant submission relationship. So if a person believes that they have sufficient values that they can threaten in the other person, then they're going to use anger. Okay. If that doesn't work, then the next move might be to use tears. So you'll watch children do this. So, you know, Mommy Joey stole my toy. Okay. And so that doesn't work, and then the kid starts to cry. It's very, very interesting to watch this happen. It's essentially the human nervous system is a jukebox, and it selects song number one that it thinks it's going to be the most successful song. And if that doesn't get the parent to dance, then it hits the next button, and it hits song number two. Now, humans, you know, adults are the same way. They're really ultimately not a lot more sophisticated than children. And so in this case, if anger and intimidation, i.e. threats, can't get it done, and in this case, he's not going to use anger and threatening communication, although, by the way, he could. And in this situation, he wants her to do something that he's capable of doing but he doesn't want to do because he's lazy. And he's trying to manipulate her. Now, one of the ways that sometimes people will get things done where they don't have to do it is show irritability and anger, just generally, not necessarily directed at the partner. Because in this way, what they're basically saying to the partner is, boy, have I put up with a lot of crap today. I have been pushed around and out-negotiated and threatened, and basically I had to be the good guy all day long. So I'm walking in short. Okay, I've basically been hosed, and a bunch of my time and energy has been stolen today. And now if I start signaling that around my relationship when I get home, the partner is going to think, oh boy, he's been treated unfairly today, and he's angry, and therefore I now need to sort of take up some slack and make sure I don't, you know, try to do this 50-50 in the next 2 hours. I'm going to bend over backwards and make it 70-30 so that he'll calm down and feel better. See what I'm saying? So that could be one way that this guy would have tried to get this done. But in this case, we don't have that backdrop. What we have is a simple matter of he's going to effectively, he's using tears. Now, you can't see the tears, But what tiers are part of is a more general strategy that we're going to call pathetic. Okay, so this is a pathetic strategy, and the number one pathetic strategy is you start crying. Okay, and what the purpose of this? Not consciously. These are blind unconscious programs. Although there are, of course, known to be some crafty people that can cry on demand, and that's pretty fancy, and they can be very effective. But that's not what most people have. Most people don't have that kind of access to that ability. So when you cry, what's happening is this is an unconscious manipulative strategy to gain concessions from the other person that are likely to be, the other person is likely to be in a position to be able to grant them because they are dominant with respect to that resource. And so so typically people will cry, and what they are doing and why this can be very effective is that usually the ultimate dominant resource holder in a human being's life is a parent, okay? So in your life, as a four-year-old, you have something threaten some value or take it or you want it and you cry. And so as a result, what happens is that they're so much of their DNA with you, they are designed by nature to consider your interests almost as important as their own. And so as a result, they are very likely to have altruistic behavior not too far down the food chain in terms of something that they will do. So if a kid is squawking, for example, about how starved they are, a parent just might feed them their lunch, okay, and just say, oh, here, Mary, I'm fine. See what I'm saying? And this would actually be genetically useful for both parents and offspring to be sensitive to these dynamics where the parent, if the parent could give up a resource, it might be worth it to them genetically to give it to their kids. So altruistic behavior throughout the animal kingdom is very, very common between parents and offspring, and it's enormously common and enormously potent in human beings for various and sundry reasons, the most important of which is that we are a low reproducer with respect to offspring. We don't produce three at a time. We produce one at a time. We only have one out of 26 births in humanity is a twin. So essentially we're a one kid per year reproducer, and as a result, kids are precious, and as a result, parents are vastly altruistic in our species relative to other species. So crying will elicit altruistic behavior out of humans. And that includes if you are, you can imagine, for example, a 75-year-old lady and a 50-year-old clerk at a store, and the little lady gets frustrated and she starts to cry. Now, even though she's a 75-year-old lady, the bottom line is it's very likely to activate a paternalistic circuit inside that 50-year-old man. And that will likely get him to be suddenly altruistic, which means he's going to now the altruism in this case is going to be he's going to race around and do a lot of things to try to operate within the rules but divert a lot of his energy to trying to help this little old lady because this altruistic circuit has been activated, okay? So in the same way, in our example, our pathetic, worthless guy here basically does a very mild version of crying. Like, gee, I just, you know, you're so much better, i.e. I'm like a child and helpless, okay? And in a really pathetic way, trying to give her some status in it. Like, you'll get some status in it, too, because you're showing that you're better than I am. But really what he's doing is he's activating a parental circuit inside the female in order to gain her time and energy and so that he can go watch a football game. That's what's happened, and that's more or less what's going on.
So men, learn how to do your own laundry. Hire it done.
There you go.
That's our next one.
That's a great business idea.
Right?
That's a great business idea if you have millions of dollars, an MBA, and any sense of how to make an app.
Now, let's see if I understand this. So it's a male and female talking. And she tells him that's a great business idea. And and then tell me what happens next, because I'm not sure I follow.
So she says, that's a great business idea. But what she really means is, that's a great business idea if you have $1 million and an MBA and et cetera and all these other status
right.
Mechanisms.
Right. In other words, it's a worthless idea. That's really what she's saying. So he's pitching her on some idea, and she's saying, don't waste your time and energy on it. So, however, so I guess the joke is that a female might be super visually encouraging of some guy's business idea, but meanwhile, she's really not that interested. I suppose that's what they're trying to say. Is that how you read that?
Yeah, I mean, I would think that if the male is, you know, I would look at it like, is he really seeking her approval or disapproval? Because if he's really, really into it, it doesn't matter what she's like, it happen. If
right.
he's really not into
right.
it and he's just trying to cloak status, then he's going to fail no matter, and he's just going to get status and put himself in the ego trap. So I guess the question in my head is how does her answer affect the guys who are on the fence about this?
Yeah, let's think about this. That the reason she says it's a great idea is because she's running a cost-benefit analysis on her alternative courses of action for giving him feedback. If he is talking to her about this idea, he clearly is very excited and thinks that it has a lot of potential. So it is not in her best interest to rain on his parade, which is incidentally why it's a really bad idea to have your best friends read your new big novel that's going to be the next great American novel. Okay? Because they're going to not want to give you negative feedback. All right? So this is an example of that situation. So this is a situation that's in social psychology we call a situation with demand characteristics. In other words, the nature of the situation is demanding or pulling for a certain response. And so in this case, talking to your girlfriend about your new business idea, you can count on her not likely giving you the truth, because she's got her own agendas about selling herself to you as a partner. And therefore, some woman may say, well, gee, I just don't want the hassle and the argument, so I just told them great. But actually, there could be a number of motivations that she may have, but most of those motivations are going to drive her towards the demand characteristic of the situation, which is to be agreeable and enthusiastic, even if you're not.
Now, see, I have some friends, not very many do this, but we're fairly comfortable about sharing ideas, and if we have a bad idea, the friends will say, "No, that's a terrible idea," or "No, that, you know, if you write, but that's a you know that you're not going to really succeed if you do that way." They're pretty harsh and pretty straight up, and we are all this way with each other. But
right.
So how do you explain that?
You explain that because they're not trying to sleep with you, and they're not trying to get a lifetime commitment out of you as a marriage partner. Okay. So they don't have the kind of ulterior, and they don't have as much on the line. A female in a romantic relationship is under a very high demand situation to signal high cooperation. So your friends, being a bunch of males, are male. You know, I pity females that don't know this. If you've ever hung around a bunch of testosteronized males, football team or like that, it's unbelievable how disagreeable they can be with each other. And it's no problem, okay? They call it busting your balls. Have no problem criticizing, making fun of each other, completely dissing any idea anybody has about anything, and outright contradicting them on just about any opinion under the sun. So males by nature have a much greater latitude that they are not essentially out of line for just shitting all idea. Okay, so that's what's going on, Nathan. You got a little different situation.
I see. Okay, so I'll make sure to bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Next time one of those guys agrees with your idea, don't say, "What are you trying to hit on me?
Yeah.
What's going on there?"
Actually, that's exactly what happens when we agree with each other. Is we all joke about how you know how we're trying to get in each other's pants. So.
Oh my God! What a bunch of characters. All right. Rock and roll.
All right,
what else do we have?
All right, next clip here.
Yeah, they were super great. Your whole family was really sweet. Your parents were so nice. This is your cue to tell me if they liked me. Did they like me? Why haven't you said anything? Did they like me more than Maya? Please say they like me more than Maya.
All right. Yeah, this is a cute little vignette here. So, again, and what the authors of this vignette are speaking to is something kind of interesting and important in human nature. So let's take a moment to look at it. That she's commenting on how she likes the family and how they're great there, et cetera. But really, what she really wants to know is where she stacks up in their eyes. So, and of course, this is going to be important. So people are very concerned about how much esteem or status they have gained in a situation. And they are not so concerned about what they think of other people. Unless they have a competitor, in this case, this guy had some ex-girlfriend named Maya or some such thing. So that's not important. And I don't think a lot of women are panicking about that after they meet the family. Obviously, if they meet the family and the guy has brought them to the family and Maya is in the rearview mirror, then she is front and center and Maya is ancient history. So, but what she would care about, she would care about what the family thinks of her. And of course, because she's concerned about her esteem, whether or not they're going to be essentially pulling it. She's not panicked about worrying about what they think of her, but she's interested and it's important. And the reason why that's true is for a multitude of reasons. Number one reason is that the family can be motivated, highly motivated, to pull a relationship apart or put it together. And there's reasons for that that are unique in human nature to any other animal on earth. To the best of my knowledge, I have never read of another species where the parents of an adult member of the species give a rat ass about who that adult sleeps with. That is not true in humans. In humans, parents, Nate, your folks are a little bit interested in your behavior. did we hit a little circuit there?
Yes.
You haven't done any cross-examination or pressure or anything like that, have you?
Okay. No, I think I'm sufficiently disagreeable with from this now.
What's that?
I think I'm sufficiently disagreeable where they now know better.
Yep. There you go. That's the way you. You've threatened them with excommunication if they continue to harp on this. So at any rate, yeah. So the girl has every right to be fishing to try to figure out what she's up against there, if there's any objections to her, and try to sniff out what the political situation is with respect to his family. Now, what the individuals think. Whether there's disagreement among them, et cetera. She's highly motivated to sniff this out. She is also going to be paying attention to this because it's quite possible that she's trying to read where he's at, and she can read where he's at very, very cleverly by asking him where the parents are at or finding out a way for to take the temperature of the parents or the sister or whatever. And the reason for that is that he may have leaked or biased their behavior, in other words, their thinking about her. And so, therefore, this is a way for her to indirectly read the tea leaves. And so that would be another angle. Once again, the right template to be viewing this from is to be viewing everything through cost-benefit analysis. It is not particularly important for her. The value proposition on the table here is not that important for her to be signaling to him what she thinks of his parents. Now that, so in other words, she's going to be giving positive feedback, pablum positive, about this and saying all the right things. There's no cost. Therefore, this is the wise political move. So she's much more interested in what it is that they think of her, for obvious reasons, because what she's interested in is the potential and future of that relationship. So she's trying to figure out, she should get the hell out of this relationship now, because there's actually evidence leaking against her, so she should defend the eggs and make sure she doesn't wind up Stone Age pregnant, i.e. heartbroken. In the Stone Age, she would be pregnant and abandoned, but in the modern environment, she winds up merely heartbroken, etc. So she's trying to read this, and that's why in the little vignette here, we're hearing that she's all anxious. Well, that anxiety is being driven by the fact that she's actually trying to determine where she stands in this relationship, what its future is, and only secondarily, I have to say, is she really that interested in what the parents and the family think? So the person that thinks this has a rather superficial understanding of her anxiety about this in this regard. She's not up and down, jumping up and down, anxious about what the parents or relatives think. She's actually much more concerned about what the young man thinks, and she's concerned also if she has a major political problem. She's trying to assess it not under anxious conditions, but under conditions of warfare. Okay, so she's not up and jumping up and down anxious. She's interested and curious and wants to know what she can learn about the entire set of circumstances that she's finding herself in.
Fantastic. Okay, here's our last clip.
All right.
Oh, it's canceled. Looks like I can stay the night.
Oh my God, that's great. Totally was not expecting this, but that is so great. That means I haven't shaved a thing in days.
I missed the whole thing. You're going to have to explain it to me.
So the partner, the male partner says, oh, this party is canceled tonight. That means I can stay. And the girl says, oh, that's great. That's really great. And the translation is, oh, I haven't shaved anything for days.
I haven't shaved anything for days?
Yeah, the female is saying this.
Okay. Okay, so the female is rolling her eyes because there's going to be sexual activity now, and she hasn't shaved her legs or shaved her other things, and so therefore she's embarrassed about this. Is that what we're hearing?
Yes.
Okay. And was there any more to it, or was that it?
That was it.
Yeah, okay. This is sort of pathetic. These people are reaching. There's no principle here of any significance. The issue is that the guy's plans change, and what's notable, what was it that got canceled? Can't remember.
So a party or something the next day.
Yeah, okay.
I don't remember.
So let's now look at this. Let's just look at this through a little bit more clever lens to try to just ferret out and put some meaning and interest in this worthless little interchange. The bottom line is that his – there's some party that gets canceled so he can spend the night, okay? Now, quite frankly, if this relationship is very valuable to him, what the hell party could there possibly be that would be more important to go to than to be with the mate that he most wants to be with, okay? So what we already get from the jump is the attitude that he must be in a position of power in this relationship, and that she is chasing, okay? Chasing and in a very weak position, so that he literally could have his best option for his night got canceled on him. So sounds to me like I'm just going to so I might as well just stay here and screw you, which is like an unbelievable, the fact that he is actually, that he's not asking, but he's announcing that, hey, well, it looks like then I could stay the night. Okay? I didn't hear him asking that, gee, would it be okay, how would you like if I stayed? No, that's not what I heard. And so then as we follow this rather irritating, you know, vignette forward, what we find is that in the woman's head, she says, oh, great, but actually she's anxious about her sexual attractiveness and presentation, okay, which further is actually consistent with the fact that she is a second-class citizen in this relationship and she's got to be anxious about it, okay? So the anyway, that's how I read this thing. That doesn't look like a couple where there is a high level of regard from him to her. And so no surprise that it makes a little bit of sense there that she would be concerned about some of those issues. Of course, for anybody that has ever tumbled where things are not all smooth, et cetera, if you're into your partner, who the hell cares? The bottom line is that in the Stone Age, people didn't even take a bath. And if they were into each other, it was just fine.
Fantastic. Well, Dr. Lau, this is great. If any listeners want to call in next week and have some questions, feel free to email me at beatyourgenes@gmail.com, or you can call in at 657-383-0751. We are live on Wednesday Pacific Standard Time. So, Dr. Lau, what you're saying is that sometimes what people say isn't necessarily what they mean, but it may not be intentional. And there may be a whole host of different things that people actually mean that are not completely thought out or not played out. It's just an act of the nervous system trying to read cues and get some, for the value proposition of relationships.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, it's a spectacular device, the human mind. And it's socially remarkable, and it was evolved to actually send these signals, receive these signals, and not only that, send signals that may have multiple meanings and multiple interpretations in order to broaden the possibility of their flexibility as they move into the future of those relationships. So essentially, human beings are, by their very nature, very political, okay? And they're not alone. There's a famous book written, I think, by DeWall years ago called Chimpanzee Politics, as he observed all kinds of interplay between chimpanzees and how they formed alliances and how there seemed to be information being transmitted through chimpanzee troops. Certainly, we're aware that such things exist, but human beings, as much as interesting and fascinating as animal behavior is and primate behavior is, the truth is there's nothing like this ape. We are easily the greatest ape. And as an ape, we are a master of communication, manipulation, and subtle political process. And so, you know, that's going to permeate all of our relationships, and anybody who has not ever been fired is pretty good, as well as a bunch of people that have been fired.
Speaking of politics, right?
Yes, sure. Absolutely.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G and Dr. Lyle with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.